Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Justice Department has opened an investigation into the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as protests around the country continued last night. On Sunday, Kenosha police officer Rustin Chesky shot Blake in the back 7 times at point-blank range as he was getting into his car. 3 of his children were in the car when he was shot. According to his family's attorney, he is now paralyzed from the waist down. They say it would take a miracle for him to walk again. 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, a self-described militia member, has been arrested and charged with shooting 3 protesters in Kenosha after fleeing Wisconsin. 2 people were killed, including 26-year-old Anthony Huber. 1 person was seriously injured. Joining us with an on-the-ground report from Kenosha is Adam Mahoney, an independent journalist who has written for the Chicago Reporter and The Guardian. Adam has a piece out called We've All Had Enough, Kenosha in Anguish Over Jacob Blake Shooting. Hi, Adam. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, you actually spoke with people who live just minutes away from where the protests are happening, from where Jacob was shot. What are you hearing from people?
Yes, it's a lot of confusion on the ground right now because, as you know, Kenosha's in the middle of Chicago and Milwaukee, so they have a lot of folks coming in from the big towns. And a lot of the people who live in that area were not actually out on the streets during a lot of the actions, and it was like folks coming in and causing a lot of the violence and destruction. So the people around the community are just trying to pick up the pieces and figure out exactly what happened and how everything got escalated to the point that it's at now.
What can you tell us about Kenosha, and just give us a sort of a demographic sense of the city and what the relationship is like with people who live there and the police?
Yeah, so Kenosha, relative to Wisconsin, is a little bit more of a black and brown city. The state of Wisconsin, black population is only 6%, but Kenosha is double that. And we see a relatively stark contrast in where folks are living based on their race. We have more of the wealthy and white folks living along the lake, and black and brown communities in the uptown neighborhood where a lot of the destruction took place. A lot of people I talked to on the ground corroborated the fact that policing tends to be violent and targeted towards the black and brown communities. Multiple people I spoke to had run-ins with the police where they were targeted, had assault rifles pointed at them. And it all rooted in, like, either calls from residents around them or just the fact that there's hyper-vigilant policing in the community.
What can you tell us about Jacob Blake and what we are learning about the tragic shooting? On Sunday, he was shot in the back 7 times. The video was shared widely on social media. 3 of his kids were in the car when he was shot. His family has spoken out. His family's attorneys say that he is now paralyzed from the waist down and he might not ever walk again.
Yeah.
I should say that sounds odd to say that. If you're paralyzed, obviously you can't walk, but there seems to be a little bit of confusion about whether or not they think he is going to be paralyzed for the rest of his life, but they think maybe he might still be able to walk. Have you been able to confirm any of those details?
I was at the press conference with the family on Tuesday, and they did confirm the fact that medical professionals do not believe that Jacob will ever be able to walk again. But the family, which acknowledged they're very much so rooted in religion, truly believes that Jacob will be able to power through the situation and be on his own 2 feet again. But I think something that's important to note is the last time Jacob was in surgery is when the shooting by Kyle, the 17-year-old boy, actually happened. So we have someone who was being aided by the police and ended up killing 2 people while an unarmed black man who was shot 7 times in the back was sitting in surgery fighting for his life.
What else struck you when you heard Jacob's family speak at that press conference?
You know, it was very emotional for me, as a black man sitting there and watching this black family in pain and having you know, the media and different folks consuming that trauma. But the biggest thing for me is one of the family members brought up the fact that it was Jacob's, one of Jacob's children's birthday. And now for the rest of their life, their birthday is not going to be associated, you know, with a celebration, but the fact that their father was shot and paralyzed that day. That's what they're going to have to live with for the rest of their life.
Wow. That reminds me of what happened with Rayshard Brooks, the black man who was shot and killed at an Atlanta Wendy's. He was actually going to be with his daughter the very next day to celebrate her birthday.
Yeah, I think it's super important to note the media and the public tends to focus on the initial victim of you know, the police brutality and the violence, but that effect like seeps into the family and you know, rocks them to the core long beyond the initial act of violence.
Exactly, and those three children they'll have to deal with this trauma for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and they're all very young, and were literally in the car with their father as it happened.
We're speaking with Adam Mahoney. He's on the ground in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and he's writing for The Guardian. He interviewed a number of community members about what's happening in their city. Adam will be with us for about 15 or so more minutes. So if you have any questions or comments about what is happening in Kenosha, the protests that are going on, the shooting that took place, just so much is happening right now. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Adam, you said that the destruction that we have seen in Kenosha was caused by people who came from out of the city, which tends to be the case in many cities. In fact, it's so difficult to know who these people are. I was watching video in Denver, Colorado, where these guys just dressed in all black were just walking around with what looked like sledgehammers and just randomly, hitting store windows. And you just have to wonder, who are these people?
Yeah.
I mean, every city is obviously different, but, you know, can you just elaborate on this? What are you hearing from the local community about the destruction that we're seeing in Kenosha?
Yeah, local residents are very adamant in the fact that it's not their community members causing this violence, because a lot of the different shops and storefronts that have been hit are all family-owned businesses. There were no, like, commercial industries actually affected by the violence relatively. I spoke to a couple of people who have been out on the ground every single day since the shooting on Sunday. And one protester said that on Monday, when things first escalated with the National Guard being called in and sheriff out in their riot gear and such, is the fact that there were people coming in and license plates, driving cars with license plates that weren't from Wisconsin, dropping rocks and bricks on corners that would be ultimately used to be destroyed buildings. So there's not really a consensus on who these people are, besides the group that the 17-year-old boy was a part of.
Right.
Reports have shown that was organized through Facebook, and they had folks from the Chicago area and Milwaukee coming in to what they say protect buildings and property for the community there.
Right. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I just wonder, how do you think the media should deal with all of this? Because, as you say, local community members say, why would our own people trash the businesses of people they know? That just doesn't make sense. I've heard the same thing in Oakland. People say, you know, local protesters here do not do this to these small independent businesses. So how do you think the media should report on this?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult situation, especially for national publications and global publications, even like The Guardian, because they're sending in reporters like myself. I'm actually based in Chicago, so I'm not as familiar with Kenosha, and they're sending in folks here who don't really know the area. But I think as any form of journalism, you have to root your work in the lived experiences of the folks that are, you know, being affected by the situation, and trusting their voices instead of following narratives that have been uplifted by mainstream media outlets.
Right. And again, you just wonder, I mean, it's in some cases, it's just hard to tell people apart. People are dressed all in black and walking around with sledgehammers. I mean, who does this?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is most of the people who are out there looking to cause harm and destruction don't come out until the curfew. They don't come out until the sun goes down. So being in the community and being around folks who are there during the day, cleaning up and trying to, you know, assess the damage and just piece together the situation in their hometown, I think that's been super important. I mean, vital for my reporting. Just speaking with folks who are, you know, literally just trying to piece their life back together after all of this.
Right. We have a caller. Let's hear from Tim in San Francisco. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Wow. I got to say, I'm sure we're all tired of this story, but this story keeps happening. And I got to say, it feels like the push is Trump can't win. Let's have a civil war. And my son said that 6 months ago, and I went, oh, you're being crazy. But every day, the stuff he says, the actions that happen, the reaction to whatever happened, it really feels like that's the agenda, that I can't win, so let's just blow it up.
Well, what are your thoughts about that, Adam? Were you able to talk to anyone about that?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I do think it's important to note that we've seen all of this happen before Trump. When President Obama was in office, he had, you know, Ferguson and Baltimore, he had these uprisings and riots to police violence. And his reaction was to do basically the same thing that Trump did, send in more troops and then send in federal agents. But for folks in Kenosha, a lot of them are thinking about this upcoming election because Wisconsin is a swing state and their vote actually matters. They're piecing together the situation to try to figure out, you know, where they stand along, you know, fighting for racial equality and racial justice, and what that looks like through the electorate.
Well, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I recently spoke with State Representative David Bowen, who presides over Kenosha and is from Kenosha, and he acknowledged the fact that, you know, the vote isn't the end-all to this situation. There still needs to be community organizing and people on the ground creating, you know, the world that they want to see, because there are limits within our electorate system which have to be acknowledged.
Right. Well, thank you for the call, Tim. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have any thoughts about what's going on right now, Adam will be with us for the next 10 or so minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's talk about what we know about Kyle Rittenhouse. The Guardian reports that Rittenhouse is only 17 years old. He appears to have long been interested in law enforcement and considers himself a militia member working to protect property, according to his social media reports. BuzzFeed reports that he appears to be a supporter of Trump and posted a TikTok video from a Trump rally he attended in Iowa in January. So before we go into what happened when Kyle Rittenhouse allegedly shot three people and killed two, Adam, what can you tell us about these militia guys who were on the streets? Based on what I saw in the video, they are fully decked out in military garb with what looks like automatic rifles.
Yeah, it was a very crazy situation for me to be a part of, because I'm not really used to being in an open carry state. But throughout the day, even in daylight, there were dozens of people walking around with long assault rifles and handguns, which for me, as somebody just coming into the situation, made it super difficult, you know, to decipher between the quote-unquote good and bad. But I did notice, before the militia and the armed vigilantes came into the city with an agenda later that night, that there were business owners standing in front of their there were multiple business owers standing in front of their storefronts and shops with assault rifles protecting their businesses. So I do think that some of those folks are actually from Kenosha and were doing what they thought was necessary to, you know, to protect their belongings. But it got a little muddy when those groups of people who weren't from the community came in and tried to enforce their power.
The Verge is reporting that Facebook is facing major scrutiny over posts by a militia group called the Kenosha Guard, and they're the ones that issued a, quote, call to arms in advance of the protest. Facebook took down their Facebook page on Wednesday morning, identifying the post as violating community standards. But, you know, some people said that they reported this in advance of the protest. Facebook moderators said the event itself was not in violation of their policies, but comments could be reported for inciting violence. For example, one user reported a comment threatening to put nails in the tires of protesters' cars, but it too was found to be within the bounds of Facebook policies.
Yeah, I mean, multiple people on the ground that I spoke to the day of the shooting knew that there was a threat of white supremacist violence. There were groups of protesters pleading with folks to not go out that night because they expected something, you know, bad to happen, which eventually did. But one of the things that I felt bad about in the situation is I heard all of those warnings and I heard all of those threats, and then during the night, when the National Guard was out and when the National Guard was advancing on protesters, it kind of overpowered that in the back of my mind, and I forgot that that threat was still, you know, prevalent. So I think it's difficult for a lot of folks on the ground because they felt like, you know, they were facing violence from multiple places. They were facing violence. They were facing police violence and state violence, as well as violence from these vigilante groups coming in. And it was hard to, you know, decipher which threat was credible at which point.
Wow. So you've got the local police, you've got the National Guard, and then you have these guys in military garb with automatic rifles.
Yeah. And Trump did send in federal law enforcement. They were there last night, a couple blocks away from the protests, but they did not engage with protesters.
Can you also talk about the relationship between these militia members and the National Guard? I want to play a clip that has been shared widely on social media. And you see a massive Humvee, and then you see people kind of pop out of the Humvee, which I'm assuming are National Guard, and then they're offering water to the militia members. Let's play a clip of that exchange.
Hey, thank you, guys. Yeah. Need water? Seriously. Guys, we're all right. We need water.
We need water.
We'll throw you one.
Thank you.
All right, come on, guys. Let's get out of here.
Damn. Which way should we go? We'll bring a couple. Thank you. Yes, you. You are a civilian. This area is closed to them. You're trespassing. Leave. Leave now.
Hey, you throw one up here. Officer, can you throw one?
We got a couple. We got to save a couple, but we'll give you a couple. We appreciate you guys. We really do.
So that is a clip from, do you know, Adam, are those National Guard members telling these militia members that they appreciate them?
Yeah, the people in the black Humvees were National Guard.
So what are you hearing? Have you been able to interview any officials about why National Guard are telling the militia members that they appreciate them and handing out water to them? I mean, are they working hand in hand?
Yeah, I haven't been able to interview any officials, but yesterday the Kenosha police captain went on air and basically said that, or basically gave his support to those armed militiamen and saying that, you know, just doing what they thought was necessary to protect property and to protect buildings. One of the things that I think is important to point out is just the stark contrast that night. Protesters who were protesting police violence and police brutality were met with projectiles, pepper spray, and pepper bullets, while we had armed vigilantes coming in who were, you know, met with thanks and in water bottles.
Well, we're going to definitely do more shows about this. I mean, we've talked about this for many years, but there is a new report out. The Guardian has a piece this morning that says white supremacist groups have infiltrated U.S. law enforcement agencies in every region of the country over the last 2 decades. And so we're going to be doing a show about this in the coming weeks. I wanted to ask you about the shooting that took place allegedly by Kyle Rittenhouse. And again, I mean, these videos are on social media, and you know, it's hard not to actually watch these things. And it's good that they're out there so we all know what actually happened. But can you describe what happened that night? It looked like Kyle and others had these semi-automatics and a group of people ran toward him, and that's when he started shooting.
Yeah, so I actually was not on the scene. I left, I don't know if I'm thankful for it, but I left half an hour before it happened. But talking to people on the ground, there still was a lot of confusion about the altercation that took place, because there is reports that there was an altercation or a scuffle between, you know, the armed group and protesters who were there at the time. Until it was confirmed by the police department, there was also people who didn't even know if there were multiple shooters or not, because it was such a frenzy and bullets were coming from different places. But after Kyle did let off those rounds, he was able to just, you know, walk by the local police and the National Guard without being apprehended.
Right. There is video of this also. Kyle Rittenhouse, the alleged shooter who has been arrested, is casually walking toward police and giving them some sort of signal. The police did not lay a hand on him. In fact, they were saying, you know, get away, get away. And he was able to go right to the side of the police car and talk to police officers. And then, according to reports, he fled the state.
Yeah, I mean, it truly doesn't make any sense that you could have someone who murdered two people in cold blood in front of dozens of officers, first be in communication with those officers, and then secondly, cross state lines and escape their grasp.
He's now being held without bond in Lake County, Illinois. Authorities have not said whether he's a member of any of those groups, but he is a self-described militia member. Before the shooting, he lived with his mom in an apartment complex beside a park in Antioch, a bedroom community that sits just south of the Wisconsin border. And this is according to the Washington Post and the Chicago Tribune. You know, this raises so many questions about where we are right now, Adam. I mean, what is a 17-year-old doing with an automatic rifle joining a militia group?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough. I feel like we're in a place, especially with social media and these like dark web groups that are being able to recruit young kids and indoctrinate them in different ideologies that weren't necessarily accessible to folks before this. And we see it on both sides of the political spectrum as well. I mean, it's really heightened the quote unquote like leftist radical education as well, but it's a very tough situation to navigate, because these groups that are recruiting kids are seen as anonymous and don't necessarily leave a paper trail online.
Right. And also, that's the other thing, is we need to go down this rabbit hole of social media. The Daily Caller, or Rittenhouse, told the Daily Caller just moments before he allegedly began shooting, quote, "Part of my job is to protect people. If someone is hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I have my rifle. I've got to protect myself, obviously." I mean, he's 17. Mm-hmm. So we have to really do a show about this rabbit hole that these young people are going down on social media. Any final thoughts, Adam, about what really struck you when you interviewed community members? Because they're really just in the thick of all of this.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that these folks are just stuck in a hard place. They obviously don't condone police violence, and they don't condone what happened to Jacob Blake. But on the other end, a lot of, especially the black and brown folks in the community, you know, they're a couple paychecks, they're a couple days away from poverty. And to have businesses burned down and to lose jobs, as well as access to resources being limited, because now folks have to go leave the county just to get food or go to the grocery store or get any supplies that they need. It's just caused such a burden on these folks that ultimately did come at the hands of state violence, but was just exacerbated by protesters and also people coming in from different communities who don't even live there.
Right. And rent is due for everybody, for people who have small businesses. It's just across the board.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Adam Mahoney is an independent journalist who has written for the Chicago Reporter and The Guardian. And you can read the piece that he wrote, "We've All Had Enough, Kenosha in Anguish Over Jacob Blake Shooting," at yourcallradio.org.